Welcome to Judges Session 1. First, let's set the context and remind ourselves of when these stories in Judges took place. This book tells the history of the people of Israel between the conquest of Canaan under Joshua and the time when kings ruled Israel. Judges covers about 320 years of Old Testament history. That's a long time, but in spite of covering so many years of Bible history, this is generally a neglected book for Christian study. I think you'll be glad you didn't neglect it. This book is in direct contrast with the events recorded in Joshua, which is a wonderful picture of the victory of faith in the Christian life. Judges, on the other hand, shows us what happens when faith declines. The KJV Bible Commentary states that Joshua is a picture of the potential of total victory that is available to every child of God, while Judges is a picture of potential defeat, which will be experienced every time one fails to totally drive out the enemy. In some significant ways, Judges gives us a graphic picture of our times with its stories of moral, spiritual, and ethical decline, many providing valuable principles and lessons for you and me. Take a look at the first and last verses of the book. Judges chapter 1, verse 1, "Now after the death of Joshua, it came to pass that the children of Israel asked the Lord, saying, Who shall be first to go up for us against the Canaanites to fight against them? Now look at the last verse of the book, chapter 21, verse 25. In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. What do these verses reveal about the people during the course of this book? Well, clearly, something happened to Israel to produce such a rapid decline away from dependence on God. At the beginning, they asked the Lord what to do, to independence. By the end, everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Consequently, the times of the Judges is often referred to as the Dark Ages of Israel's history. Instead of the victory of faith seen in the previous book of Joshua, the theme of Judges is failure through compromise. Or as Warren Wiersbe puts it, a book of failure on the part of God's people to trust His word and claim His power. Keep this theme in the back of your mind as we explore this book. As our series title indicates, Judges presents living examples of people who served God in very difficult times and survived. It presents people who did not survive, who succumbed to the wave of sin. They provide examples of the consequences of spiritual compromise and disobedience. And it especially presents a sovereign God. This book recounts the exploits of people called judges, divinely appointed military leaders, saviors, or what we might call freedom fighters, with executive and legislative power. But the focus throughout the book is not on the individual judge deliverer, but on the ever-present and all-powerful God. He is the real hero, spoken of 240 times, and He is still sovereign today, watching His people, looking for faith, superintending the flow of history toward the climax He has planned from eternity past. Before we plunge into the details, let's get a quick bird's-eye view of the structure, which is in three parts. The prologue, chapters 1 and 2, states the theme and summarizes the decline. The main narrative, chapters 3 through 16, gives us a selection of stories illustrating the theme. And then the epilogue, chapters 17 through 21, describe two terrible stories emphasizing the theme. Warren Wiersbe suggests these useful words to summarize the outline of the book: apathy, apostasy, and anarchy. The prologue is in two parts. One gives the history, chapter 1, verse 1 through chapter 2, verse 5. The other focuses on the theme, chapter 2, verse 6 through chapter 3, verse 6. So let's begin first by looking at the historical introduction. This follows the typical pattern of biblical narrative. First, the command of the Lord. Second, the response of Israel. And third, the evaluation of the Lord. So first of all, the command of the Lord. Judges continues right on from the story of Joshua, noting his death in the first verse. The book of Joshua recorded the conquest of Canaan under God's command and promise. This conquest was not yet complete, so as Judges opens, the people ask God which tribe should lead them as they go to fight the Canaanites. God's command is that the royal tribe of Judah should go up first and lead the way. Verse 2 says, "And the Lord said, Judah shall go up. Indeed, I have delivered the land into his hand." That was the Lord's command. So, what is the response of Israel? There are five responses. Let's begin with the first one, which focuses on Judah with help from the tribe of Simeon, which inherited territory within the land assigned to Judah. Beginning with verse 3, Judah said to Simeon his brother, "Come up with me to my allotted territory that we may fight against the Canaanites, and I will likewise go with you to your allotted territory." And Simeon went with him. Then Judah went up, and the Lord delivered the Canaanites and the Perizzites into their hand, and they killed 10,000 men at Bezek. And they found Adoni-Bezek in Bezek and fought against him, and they defeated the Canaanites and the Perizzites. Then Adoni-Bezek fled, and they pursued him and caught him and cut off his thumbs and big toes. And Adoni-Bezek said, 70 kings with their thumbs and big toes cut off used to gather scraps under my table. As I have done, so God has repaid me. Then they brought him to Jerusalem, and there he died. Israel's first response to God's command is Judah's initial faithfulness. There are some specific reasons for the successes of Judah and Simeon. They asked God. They worked together. The Lord was with them. God worked on their behalf. He delivered the Canaanites and the Perizzites into their hand. And they worked hard too, if you look at the verbs used in the first 20 verses. They fought, they took, they struck, went against, attacked, killed, destroyed, drove out, expelled. Let's pick up the story again at verse 8. "Now the children of Judah fought against Jerusalem and took it. They struck it with the edge of the sword and set the city on fire. And afterward the children of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites who dwelt in the mountains, in the south and in the lowland. Then Judah went against the Canaanites who dwelt in Hebron." Now the name of Hebron was formerly Kirjath Arba. "And they killed Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai." Again, Judah's initial faithfulness is seen here. They fought the enemy everywhere, in the mountains, the lowlands, around Jerusalem, and down south into the desert. Their assault to the south took them to the city of Hebron. This city had been identified earlier in Joshua chapter 20, verse 7, as one of the cities to be set aside as a city of refuge. So, conquering Hebron could be a story picture of establishing sanctuary or refuge, as this city had been for Abraham many generations earlier. Now, it's useful to note that this place, Hebron, was associated with giants. Numbers chapter 13, verse 22, tells us that the three tribes noted here in Judges 1:10, Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai, are descendants of Anak. In other words, they were giants. Consequently, James Jordan notes that if we want to have sanctuary, we have to destroy the giants. For example, have you found in your own life that setting aside time to meet with God, the sanctuary of devotions, is a hard thing to do? There are giants in our busy lives which will distract us and make it difficult to get to this sanctuary, this place of refuge, and we must fight them and destroy these giants. Now verse 11. "From there they went against the inhabitants of Debir." The name of Debir was formerly Kirjath-Sefer. "Then Caleb said, 'Whoever attacks Kirjath-Sefer and takes it, to him I will give my daughter Aksa as wife.' And Othniel the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, took it. So he gave him his daughter Aksa as wife." This is one of the Bible's romantic love stories. It must be important. It's told twice. The same story was told back in Joshua chapter 15. The former name, Kirjath-Sefer, means the city of books. So the conquest of this place could well be a mini-picture of the destruction of their ungodly Canaanite civilization, because civilizations of any era depend on the preservation of their books, the ongoing media records of the values and traditions of that civilization. We need to be aware, as Israel was, of the importance of books and media input in our personal and family lives. TV, movies, internet, video games, music, These are all crucial in forming the basis of our personal philosophy and values. In the anti-God cultures in which we live, it will take godly backbone to keep some of these media influences out of our family lives, especially for the sake of our children and grandchildren. Caleb knew that it would only be possible to conquer this stronghold of the city of books through God's power. So, in offering his daughter as an incentive, he was assured of getting a godly husband for her. Othniel, his nephew, does so. To win the bride, he destroys the city. Then Aksa, the daughter, asks Dad for an additional wedding gift, springs of water. Verse 14, Now it happened when she came to him, Othniel, that she urged him to ask her father, that's Caleb, for a field. And she dismounted from her donkey, and Caleb said to her, What do you wish? So she said to him, Give me a blessing. Since you have given me land in the south, give me also springs of water. And Caleb gave her the upper springs and the lower springs. Their new home, you see, was located in a desert area, and water is especially essential there, of course. These springs therefore make their family property a miniature Garden of Eden, and the result is truly a blessing. In session number 2, we will follow Israel's further responses, good and bad, to God's command.